Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that almost always has a plan, rarely curses, but is willing to rip your heart out. The fantasy novel Blood Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Welcome to Blood Magic, the podcast. Selena Anderson is a small-town teacher with a big-time problem with vampires who are out to kill her before she can make them her next meal. She is looking forward to a quiet, lazy summer in Culpeper, Virginia. At least this is her plan until three strangers enter her life in one day. Welcome to podcast episode number 19. Selena, the Guardians, the Werebears, the Witches are on the way to Dermot to rescue the Werebear cubs, their children. Dermot was 25 miles away. We made it there in 1 hour. This included our stop at the store Forever 21. Bob warned us that we wouldn't get through the front door of Hawk if we didn't look appropriate. I found myself wearing a red leather miniskirt and a gold metallic blouse and a deep V-neck. It was tight, but not so tight that I couldn't hide the back sheath of my sword. My other knives were strapped to my thighs under the skirt. Dermot was an urban city in Virginia with a clear line between the haves and have-nots. We drove through upscale neighborhoods with grand homes surrounded by manicured lawns enclosed in castle-like fencing. These neighborhoods also boasted fine fashion boutiques and refined cuisine. Couples strolled through the streets holding hands. Others were running together in jogging clubs. Then there was the other side of Dermot. On this side, many homes sat abandoned and boarded up with foreclosure signs in the yards. This side had not fared well during the last recession. The youth ran the streets in pack. Working women stood on the corners waiting for men to ride up in their cars. The parks were concrete jungles choked with yellow weeds. Hawk Nightclub sat on the border between the two worlds. It was on the ground floor of a skyscraper bordered on one side by condemned stores, and the other side had coming soon signs for stores like Pottery Barn and Sephora. Regardless of its location, Hawk was a hot spot. The club flashed its red and black motif and had a line of people down the block. It was a motley crew of people. You had your preppy looks, the sophisticated styles, then you had the gothic and punk looks. What they all had in common, though, was the barely there clothing. We parked in the adjoining parking garage. Gerald fitted us all with two-way listening devices. We could receive instructions from him in the van, and he could also record our conversations for evidence that we might use later with the police. He stayed in the van along with Tina. We got out and reserved our spot in line. Lucky for us, the line was moving quickly, and in no time, we were in the main entrance. First, we had to pass between two bouncers of gargantuan size. One was white, the other was black. They both had shaved heads and wore a matching ensemble of black mesh shirts and tight gold leather pants. They looked us over from head to toe, checked our ID, and took our entrance fee. They were even polite enough to open the doors for us. Inside was hot and humid. The music was blaring, and the dance beat had almost everyone gyrating on the dance floor. We walked around, and the music cycled from hip-hop to techno to even house music. After traveling the perimeter of the club, we decided to split up. Bob, Ian, and Catherine continued to circulate around the dance floor. The rest of us hit the bar. A buxom redhead took our orders. She was clad in a gold lace bra top and black leggings that looked like she had been poured into them. As we sipped our drinks, John tried to be smooth and talked to her to get information we needed. She was fun and flirty, until he hinted that he was looking to score some illegal substances. She clammed up tight and found excuse to tend to the patrons on the other side of the bar. A sandy-haired man came to take our refill orders. He was shirtless and wearing low-slung black jeans. So Jude tried his hand at persuasion and backed it up with a $20 bill. The man took the money and went on break. We were striking out. I felt a tap on my shoulder and turned to be confronted by a young man that looked like he was barely legal enough to be there. He had unnatural Tweety Bird yellow hair and a line of piercings that ran both rims of his ears. "I know why you're here. You may come with me," he said in clipped English. We got up and he led us around the perimeter of the dance floor through a black door with the white stenciling that said staff only. Through the door was a long hallway also painted black. The man led us to the very end. Inside was a warehouse-style room. There were upper-level balconies with armed humans on either side. In the center of the very open space was a large mahogany desk and a vampire that flashed a scarlet red. He appeared to be in his mid to late 30s with platinum blonde hair and deep-set coal black eyes. He also had human guards flanking him. It was strange to see a vampire relying on human protection. This also presented a dilemma for us. If there was a fight, we'd have to deal with human casualties. Vampire deaths were no fuss, no muss. They simply turned to ash when they were dead. Humans left a lot of evidence behind for the police. "Selena, what brings you to my establishment?" he asked, with the smooth air of a businessman. "I suppose you're Valentino," I said. "Indeed I am." "I want to know the source of the drugs you're peddling." He laughed at that. "You are so direct and to the point. I admire that in a woman. Unfortunately, I don't know what you're talking about. I run a legal, very legal business here." "Now you're being coy." "I can't say I admire that in a man," I countered. A muscle ticked in Valentino's jaw. He didn't like that comment. There was a shout from the balcony. I looked up in time to see a green canister flying towards us. It exploded into smoke. It was tear gas. Fighting broke out all around me. Valentino launched himself over the desk with his fangs glistening. He grabbed me, and before I could call out, he slammed a hand down over my mouth. That was his mistake. I bit into the callous flesh of his hand and drew blood. With just a few drops, I slid into his mind. He looked down at me wide-eyed and began to loosen his iron grip. Then someone hit me in the back of my head. Blackness engulfed my vision. Then I was floating into nothing. I opened my eyes and found myself confronted by a very beautiful vampire. She sat on a plum and cream bed in front of me. She wore a long cream silk dress. Her hair was blue-black and fell into long ringlets around her shoulders. Her eyes were a luminous chocolate brown. I also noticed that my weapons laid on the bed next to her. I made a move to rise, and that's when I saw that I was tied to a plush plum chair. Ropes were bound around my middle, holding me in place. My arms and my legs were tied together as well. "Who are you?" I asked, feeling a little groggy. "I'm Chia, Valentino's wife," she said in accented English. "Where am I?" "You're in our home. Valentino is trying to decide what to do with you. I say we drain you dry and solve all our problems." She practically purred. "I bet you are very tasty." "I probably taste like ash and death." "You know that saying, you are what you eat," I countered. "Yes, I've heard of you. You are a living vampire, one abomination." "What makes me an abomination? That I'm alive as opposed to a walking corpse?" Her comment bothered me a little. Chia smiled and got up from the bed and glided towards me. She bent over me and ran her hand through my hair. She curled that very same hand into a fist and yanked my hair at the roots. "Don't try and insult me," she growled into my face. "Threatening someone who can't fight back? Now that really makes you the better person." I felt reckless. I mused that the hit over my head must have done some damage. Chia's face was tense with fury. "I don't think I'm going to wait for Valentino," she whispered, as she used her grip on my hair like a handle to twist my face away, baring my neck. I felt a presence in the other room, and I lashed into the thread of a connection and silently called for help. I felt Chia's warm breath on my neck, then the door to the bedroom slammed open. "Chia!" Valentino yelled. She jumped back for me like a scalded cat. "You are not to hurt her," Valentino said between clenched teeth. Then he stalked over to me and lifted the hair off my neck, checking for wounds. I did my best to maintain the composure I felt over Valentino without drawing too much suspicion. "Why are you showing so much concern for her?" Chia demanded. "She is a lowly human." "Because I feel," Valentino began, then he turned to face Chia. "You cannot watch her anymore. Come with me." He took her by the elbow to lead her from the room. Chia was furious. She turned on him, clawing and snapping her teeth at him. "You are not yourself. What has she done to you?" Chia ranted. Valentino held her effortlessly in his arms and all but tossed her from the room. Then he closed the door and turned the lock. I think my lucky stars that Valentino must have been a young vampire. Otherwise, I doubt I would have been able to have a connection to him with just a few drops of blood. After getting rid of Chia, Valentino came back to attend to me. He pulled a knife out of the waistband of his pants and slipped the rope around my middle. He was about to cut my legs free when there was a commotion in the other room. I could hear glass breaking and objects being thrown. There were shouts and screams and sounds of bodies or perhaps body parts hitting the hardwood floor. Then the door to the bedroom was kicked open off its hinges, and there stood Devilinus the Jew. Valentino stood in front of me. He crouched down, ready to spring. Devlin aimed his sawed-off shotgun at his chest and pumped it once, dropping silver bullets down into the chambers. "No, wait," I yelled. "Don't hurt him." All the men froze. "What do you mean?" Devlin asked carefully, never taking his eyes off Valentino. "He's on my side." "Look," I said, waving my arms. "He cut me loose." The two men eyed each other. Devlin slowly lowered his weapon. Valentino stood up from his crouch. So Jew edged into the room, finished cutting my legs free. When I was able to stand on my own, I asked, "How did you find me?" "The listening devices also have GPS trackers in them," Devlin explained. "Once you disappeared, we were able to follow you here." I turned to Valentino, remembered the main goal of our mission in the first place. "Valentino, who was your drug supplier?" I asked. "We get our deliveries by courier every night at 4 a.m. I don't know who supplies them. I need you to get us back into the nightclub so we can meet this courier. Can you do this?" I said. I didn't know how long the compulsion would last, so time was of the essence. "Yes, I can," he breathed. "It's almost 4 a.m. now," said Jew warned. I gathered my weapons off the bed, and the three of us left. We waded through the piles of decomposing vampires in the outer rooms. John, Gerald, and Catherine were watching the exits for signs of more trouble. Outside, Tina was weaving a spell of silence to keep the noise of the fight from reaching any nosy neighbors that might call the police. We all got into the brothers' black van with Valentino in tow, and we headed back to Hawk. At Hawk, we entered the club through the back employee entrance with Valentino as our passport. Devlin, Sajou, Catherine, and John came in with us this time. The club was still hopping with partygoers. The music was playing in surround sound throughout the establishment. Valentino's human staff looked at us with suspicion as he led us through the establishment, but no one outright questioned his desire to have us there. He left word with one of his burly bouncers to have the courier meet him in the office. We found ourselves back in the long black hallway. Instead of leading us into the last room where all hell broke loose, Valentino took us to a smaller office. The room looked more like your typical executive room. Valentino sat behind a black desk. Devlin occupied two of three black leather chairs in front of his desk. Catherine sat on a couch off to the side, so Jew and John stood on either side of the door. The clock on Valentino's desk showed it was 4:03 a.m. There was a knock at the door. One of Valentino's men led in a skinny gothic kid. He had pimples on his face. He was dressed from head to toe in black and had studded dog collars around his neck and wrist. His hair was dyed an inky black and styled into a spiky mohawk. He had a black messenger bag strapped across his body. The guard left and he took a few steps in the room, then sensed something was up. He tried to turn around and leave, but Sajou and John blocked the door. "What's going on?" he stammered. "Have a seat," Valentino commanded as he gestured to the vacant seat between Devlin and me. "These people want to talk to you." The gothic boy did as he was told and sat down, clutching the bag tightly to his side. "What is your name?" I asked. Robbie Johnson. "Robbie, I need to see what's in your bag," I said. Robbie sat there wide-eyed and unsure. Devlin got up and took the bag from him and dumped its contents on Valentino's desk. An assortment of pharmaceuticals fell out that included pills, powders, marijuana with a powdery residue. "We need to know who gave these drugs to you," I said. "I can't tell you that," Robbie said. "These drugs are tainted. They make people do terrible things," I said. "Well, I've got bigger problems than that," Robbie said defiantly. Devlin was much less patient. He pulled out one of his blades. He let the office lights glint off its razor-sharp edge. Then he turned to Robbie. "We can do this the easy way or the hard way. It's up to you, kid," he growled. The kid's eyes opened wide and they watered. "I can't tell you, or they will kill my parents," he stammered. "What do you mean?" I asked. These monsters are holding my parents hostage. I have to make these deliveries every night or they will kill them. I thought of a solution to the problem and said, if your parents were in a safe place, would you tell us about your supplier? I'd tell you anything you wanted, Robbie said. I made eye contact with Devlin over the kid's spiky hair. We were on the same page. Tell us where they're keeping your parents. We'll get them out. After that, you must tell us everything. He looked around the room as if measuring all of us, and he whispered, okay, it's a deal. At that moment, I lost my connection to Valentino. The compulsion slipped away like a balloon on a breezy summer day. He stood up, knocking his chair against the wall. I yelled, I don't have him, a split second before he launched himself over the desk at Robbie. My vampire-induced reflexes were lightning fast. I unsheathed my sword and swung through the air. I caught Valentino on his knees on the desk. His head rolled between Robbie's feet. With the loss of our host, we beat a hasty retreat out of Club Hawk. Bob directed us to a hotel where we could keep Robbie safe for the time being. At Green Bay Motel, Robbie told us about his parents, the location, and the men holding them. With that information, we devised a plan of attack. We left Robbie armed with a gun and clips of silver bullets. Two blocks from 1379 Mockingbird Lane in an upscale residential area of Dermont, Catherine and I were walking up to a black SUV. Two vampires sat inside as part of surveillance on the house with Robbie's parents. I hid in the bushes next to a house behind the vehicle along with Catherine. She transformed herself into a black bear and loped to the undercover vampires. She pulled her massive frame up on the hood of the car, then plunged her paws through the windshield. Catherine decapitated the driver with the swipe of her paw. The passenger slipped out to run back to the huge house. However, she leaped onto his back. She crushed him with her massive weight, then leaned down to tear out his throat, severing his head. Disconnected from its body, the head began to turn to ash, along with the rest of them. I gave the all clear to Devlin using my two-way earpiece. I saw shadows move around the dark colonial house. It was a grand house painted yellow with white shutters. There were no lights on, and it was quiet as a tomb. According to Robbie, it had 5 bedrooms on the second floor. His parents were kept in the master bedroom that also had a balcony. There were 3 entrances, the front door, the back porch, and a side entrance to the garage. Catherine transformed back to her human self and made her way to the garage. John and Saju positioned themselves under the balcony of the master suite. They took out their rope and grappling hook to prepare to climb their way to the balcony. I met up with Devlin, Tina, and Bob at the front door. The witches and I waited on either side of the door out of sight. Devlin knocked on the door dressed in Tomlin's police uniform. "Who's there?" came a gruff voice. "This is the police. We have a noise complaint in this residence," Devlin said, sounding very official. It took them so long to open the door, we thought they were going to resist. Then we heard the locks being thrown. Tina and Bob joined hands and began chanting a spell that would reduce the amount of violence we had to use to save Robbie's parents. The vampire that answered the door was an African-American with a close cut. He opened his mouth to question Devlin, but froze in mid-sentence. His eyes widened with shock that flitted from side to side. That was the only thing on him that was able to move. Devlin and I drew our weapons and we slid around the vampire and entered the home. The living room held a small gathering of vampires. There were 2 on the couch, 1 in the lazy boy next to the couch, and 2 more sitting by the back door. They were all frozen in place by the witch's spell. Devlin and I moved unencumbered throughout the lower level and found no immediate threats. We made our way upstairs to the second floor. The first 3 bedrooms were clear, and then we found ourselves at the master suite. Saju and John met us at the door. Mr. and Mrs. Johnson were frozen in their beds with their pajamas on. We found their limbs were still pliable, and Devlin and Saju lifted them and carried them fireman style out of the room. John was taken ahead and quickly put together an overnight bag from the closet contents. Then we too made our way out. We snuck out into the night stealthily, making our way back to the van. Tina and Bob stayed behind and held on to the spell as long as they could before running to catch up to us. We got into the van and drove through the quiet streets of Dermont. Dawn was approaching. The Johnsons snapped out of their suspended animation about a mile from the Green Bay Motel. "What's going on?" Mrs. Johnson said, looking wildly around. "You're fine, Mrs. Johnson. Robbie sent us to get you," I said. "How did you get us away from those monsters? They never let us leave the bedroom," asked Mr. Johnson. "You don't need to worry about that right now. You're safe, and we're taking you to Robbie," I said. What happens after that? They could be following us. Mrs. Johnson clutched the pearls around her neck. We're sending you to a safe house in Florida. The men that held you, well, they were bad criminals. We're trying to bring them to justice, Devlin spoke up. Are you the police? Mr. Johnson asked. Not quite, but if all goes well, we will make sure no more people are subjected to what you went through, I said. We parked ourselves on the backside of the Green Bay Motel and walked up to room 24F. I knew something was wrong the way the door was ajar. Tina and Bob guarded the Johnsons and the rest of us went inside. The room was in shambles. Furniture was overturned and slashed. There was a coppery smell in the room. We searched the room until we found Robbie underneath a mattress by the bathroom door. He was dead, in a pool of blood. He had been slit from his sternum to his groin. Robbie's intestines spilled out of him, wet and glistening. We heard police sirens. Thank you for listening. Tune in, same time, same place, for more of the adventure of Blood Magic.